Hello and welcome to the Open Goal podcast, keeping the ball on the ground in association with our friends at William Hill. Delighted to say we've got another top guest on the programme. But before we get to him, I'll introduce you to Simon Ferry.
What's happening?
He has decided to join, despite the fact that Peterhead is now top of League Two,
flying high.
He's not get carried away, he's come in to join us. Simon, how's it feel to be looking down on the rest of Scottish football? Well, another nine teams at least.
Used to play in the top league, Mark, so it's nothing new to me, mate. You know how it is.
Brilliant, good to see you. And beside them, we've pulled it off again. We've got a man of many clubs, so we're bound to hit a new listening audience out here with Lee Mayer, Aberdeen, Dundee, St Mirren, Dundee United. Fill in the blanks, Lee, go on.
There's more clubs than Jack Nicklaus.
Tiger
Woods, the update. I was on East Fife as well, on loan to Falkirk. 6 months down at Stockport. As you say, Park Thistle, assistant manager at Stranraer. Bloody wow. Hell, how long we got here?
Journeyman.
That's a good description.
What was your best club? Which one did you enjoy the most?
Being from Aberdeen, when I signed for Aberdeen, it was great. I was there for 2 years and then I left there and I went to St Mirren for 5 years. Uh-huh. And to play in two cup finals and to win a cup, that was probably the highlight of my career. But I had good times at all clubs. I'm going to sit on the fence here. Good times at all clubs, and I had bad times at some clubs as well, which I'm sure we can go into later on.
We'll get into that later. And just to give you a wee steer, you're not allowed to sit on the fence here.
You'll
have two appearances on the Open Goal podcast, two appearances in one day, your first and your last. We'll get to our first topic. Thanks for joining us, Lee. Simon, feel free to chip in. We've got to start. Kenny Miller, departure from Livingston after only 7-8 weeks in the job. That comes as a surprise to you, Lee?
It was a surprise. Well, first of all, I was surprised that he took the job. I was speaking at the end of the season and he said he still wanted to play. And when I seen that Hibs and Aberdeen were interested, I thought, well, he's got a good club there, a good choice there of clubs to go to and finish his career before he gets into management, because I knew he was wanting to go into that. But then when he took that job, I thought, personally, I looked at it, I think they're on a hide into nothing. I thought they overachieved last year, so to be up a league again. And then when you see Hoppy leave as well, you very rarely see a manager leave after we're getting a club promoted. Yeah. So I thought there was something strange there. So for him to take it, I thought it was very strange. But obviously, hey, it's Scottish football. You can't be surprised with anything. So for him to leave after 7 weeks, there's obviously things going on in the background that will be interesting to see that materialise.
What's your take on it, Simon?
I thought it was a good appointment due to the fact that they were getting him as a player. Because as I've said many times, I think he's a top player. And I think he could still go and play for a top three or four team in Scotland. But the real warning signs for me was when he took the job, and I was expecting him to bring in an older guy as an assistant or to take the team for the side while he was playing. Never brought in his own guy, and that kind of sent warning signals straight away.
I was at their game on Saturday against Motherwell. They lost 1-0, but they played well. You know, they may well have deserved to nick a draw and take it to extra time in the League Cup game. But the point that you have both made in terms of, you still get plenty to offer. With all respect to the other Livingston guys, you can see clearly their most accomplished player, their most intelligent player on the pitch. And apart from the fact they are now looking for a manager, I don't imagine they'll be able to replace Kenny Miller as a player either.
No way. They'll not get the calibre of player of Kenny Miller. I think I seen Lee Miller speaking yesterday and he looked devastated. You could probably tell he loved playing up front with Kenny Miller. The thing about Kenny Miller as well, he'll work his tail off, won't he? The quality he's got, he'll work his tail off. Great guy to have in the dressing room, a real leader, obviously.
That's why he's still going strong at the age he's going, because he's a grafter, he works hard.
38 now, isn't he?
Great example of the younger players there. Be a big, big loss, both sides for Livingston. Eh?
What does it say about Scottish football? Because we tend to, up here, we look down south and think, oh, it's ruthless. You know, managers, particularly in the Championship, the World Leagues, are only ever 8-10 games away from it. But you look at some examples up here now. Ian Cathro, less than a year. Pedro Caixinha, less than a year. That's just off the top of my head. And now you've got Kenny Miller after, you know, 2 months. What is that telling us at the moment about Scottish football when managers are losing their jobs so quickly?
I think you see that it's being treated more as a business now. But whereas before, managers would have got a bit of time. Now they're seeing, I don't know the reason why Kenny's left, but they're maybe thinking things have not got on. As Si said there's probably been a fallout between the assistant and himself. But they're maybe thinking, right, if this is not going to work, we need to just cut losses right now. It'll obviously cost Livingston some cash to get rid of him, but they're obviously thinking longer term. But I think more clubs are treating things like a business now, which at the end of the day is a business. Whereas you've seen previously in years gone past where clubs are not being treated as a business and clubs are going to administration because things are running out of hand and there's money going everywhere. Now, at the end of the day, it's a business. And then, but it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few weeks.
It's a tough gig now, isn't it? The old managing.
Yeah.
Remember when I was at Dundee, I was sat and speaking to Paul Hartley, one of the number of conversations I had with him at Dundee. and he I felt sorry for him. I remember one day we were sitting, I was injured again, obviously. And it was later on in the day, and he just came in and had a wee chat, and he was just saying the job is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and if you didn't get results, three are bad results, you could be at the door.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I think it's having a big effect on young players coming through as well. I mean, chopping and changes, man, it's no good for young players, you know what I mean? They can't build anything. Managers can't build anything. 5-10 years ago, you knew your manager was going to be, when I was here at Celtic, Gordon Strachan was going to be here 3 or 4 years. You knew the young players inside out. And now it just seems like it's a new manager every year at a club. So a young player could be doing well under one manager, a year later he's at the door, another guy's in, he doesn't fancy him, he fancies somebody else, and so on and so on. And I just think it's really disrupting young players' developments in Scotland.
Do you agree with that, Lee?
I totally. A club needs stability. The longer a manager's there, the club then gets into a rhythm, everyone knows, everyone's singing off the same hymn sheet sort of thing. Chopping and changing all the time. Si said it there, 1 minute as a player you could be comfortable, you're relaxed, you're confident, you're playing well, a new manager comes in, your face doesn't fit, you're out the door. It's chopping and changing all the time. It's not good for fans, it's not good for a club at all. You need stability to take a club forward, and all this chopping and changing is just, it causes
what club's ever been successful doing it? Mm-hmm. What club's been successful changing the manager every 2 or 3 years? Mm-hmm. None, have they?
Well, no, I always cite two examples when people say that, you know, because people will always say, look at Man United, they stuck with Alec Ferguson, it just shows you what you can get. And I agree with that to an extent, but there's also, I'd say, an example springs to mind, Celtic, John Barnes, 8 months in the job, decided it was enough, brought in Martin O'Neill, and it kicked off a very good period for the club. Likewise, you look what's happening at Rangers just now, Pedro Castillo,
he had to go ahead.
Graham Murray,
yeah.
Okay, Steven Gerrard hasn't won it yet, but the signs are very, very good. So I think, I can understand that, yeah, probably continuity and giving guys time, but I can also understand if you see things and they're going right, you need to be brave and pull the trigger. I'm not saying that's the case with Kerry Miller, and I'd never say, with my background, don't believe everything that you read in the papers, but there's been suggestions that when he initially signed, there was a 2-month break clause for either party in their agreement. So that suggests from the off, Lee, that the agreement with Kenny and Livingston, maybe they just weren't quite sure about each other right from the start.
2-month trial, sir. You've been on a few of those, haven't you?
Unsuccessful ones. The thing is, who in their right mind would take that Livingston job now?
But Kenny's clearly wanted a crack at management, and he's thought, wow, I'm getting one of the top 12 jobs in the country.
Yeah.
You know, and you think you can, but if that part of it's true, then there's clearly been a wee bit of uneasiness from the outset.
It was maybe a trial on both parts, because Kenny being untested at managerial level, it was a big gamble for Livingston. So they maybe thought, I don't know, it'll come out throughout the papers, I'm sure, that they've said, look, Kenny, here's a 2-month trial, and then see how it goes on your half, see if you like it, see how it works for us as well. But as I say, as Si said there, who's going to touch that now?
Who's going to touch it?
I think it either need to be an untested or an older guy who's been in the picture for a while.
What about Jim Duffy?
Terry Venables.
tell Stuart Baxter.
Who did you say, sorry?
Jim Duffy.
I think Duffy would take that.
I think he'd fancy himself for that.
Definitely, he's out of a job just now, isn't he? So people like that are looking for a job, or young managers that are wanting a fresh start, wanting a start in their managerial career.
So from your two background in the game then, imagine you were given the chance to appoint the next Livingston manager, but somebody that's never been in a job before, who's out there, who's a good young coach that's maybe working in an academy somewhere or working somewhere in the background that's not getting the publicity, if you like? You say, do you know what, he's worth a go, I like him.
There will be loads of them, but the fact is, you need to know, before you're going into a job like that, you need to know what's going on in the background. Because in the last 3 months, Hopkins has left after getting promoted, and now Kenny Miller's left. So you're thinking, am I going in there just to be a puppet to talk for someone else? Because if you're a young manager, you want to go in and express your own things on the game. You want to go and do your own ideas. You don't want to go in there and be a puppet for someone else. So, because if that happens, you're getting sacked for somebody else's things going wrong. So you'd rather get sacked for your own things going wrong.
Of course, yeah.
So,
but imagine a level playing field, all things being equal.
Yeah.
Who are the good young coaches out there that you can see coming through in the game?
I've heard good things about the boy Laurie Ellis at Dundee United.
Yeah.
And he's obviously no Shabba Laszlo's guy.
Used to be at Leith Rovers.
Ray McKinnon. Yeah. I think when he took the United job, I think he won the three games he was in charge, didn't he? Mm-hmm. And obviously speaking to me, Keats saying that at Dundee United, that the players really liked
James Keaton.
Sorry yeah. for everyone's at Dundee. So I've heard good things about him, but I'm going to throw him in because he's my mate. I think Kevin Thompson's really good. See, when you sit and talk to Tom about football, I know he does a young team at Rangers, but for me, he's a first team manager.
Yeah,
so I'm going to fling his name in.
So you're going for Kevin Thompson,
yeah.
the biggest shout.
Would he take it though?
I think he would take it.
Would he?
I think he,
just to
I
get
think
a first,
he, just to get,
get a first chance. Yeah.
I think he fancies him back. He's Celtic.
Do you think Kenny would tell me to take it?
You're trying to send Kenny as a striker.
No, so let's kid on. Here's the phone call. Kenny, hello, it's Kevin Thompson here. I've got a chance to love you, Joe. What comes next to you after that?
Depends how much he likes Tomo, doesn't it? If he doesn't like him, he's telling him to take it.
He's going to be open, isn't it? If he makes a phone call, then he's asking for his opinion, so he's obviously going to want to know what's going on in the background. Yeah.
Barry Ferguson? Yeah.
See, it's all guys that are... They've got great things to offer the game that are out the game, so mm-hmm. these guys might think, see what, let's take a chance at it.
Yeah.
Build a profile, put yourself in the shot window, and then you don't know where it's going to go for there, but... On the flip side of it, it could turn into a disaster. You go in there, you're gone by Christmas, then you've got that on your CV, where do you go from there?
You would think though, whoever the next manager is, and he would want to get in certainly before the end of this week, to give him at least 1 week to try and go and get a couple of bodies. We all know that the budget isn't huge at mm-hmm. Livingston, but at least give yourself a week to try and wheel and deal. Yeah. Well, but in nine, it could be for Kenny Miller, if he does sign for St Mirren, he's up against Livy on Saturday.
Brilliant, isn't
it? What a belt on that.
Brilliant. I'm saying who would take the job, but I think they've actually done all right this year. So I was expecting them to get scudded every week, if I'm honest.
One, mm-hmm. seven competitive games, albeit League Cup, but uh-huh. 1-3, drawn yeah. 2, lost 2.
And the losses were quite close. I mean, yeah. Kimmy Celtic only beat 3-1, was it 4-1? Drew 0-0 with Killie, which was a decent result.
Yeah, and played well at the weekend.
I think against Motherwell, they were a better team, somebody said as well. So you've got a...
Yeah, but they were more than decent. You know, uh-huh. Maybe deserved, maybe just a net a draw, but the Livingston goalie, Liam Kelly, had... 2-3 outstanding saves, you know. So,
you're going to get that when you come to Celtic Park. But like you say, great results. It'll be interesting to speak to Kenny and see what he's learnt in this 7-8 weeks. Mm-hmm. He's probably learnt more in this 7-8 weeks than he has in about 3 years playing football, because it's a total different for him being leading a team rather than just being playing on a Saturday. So he'll have learnt a lot from it, a lot of good, a lot of bad, and it'll do him well for the future.
Will there be any kind of people looking at Kenny and thinking, right, wait a minute, you've had a wee problem with Rangers, it's still to be resolved, you're now away for Livy after a couple of months, so people look at Kenny and think, right, people that don't know him think, wait a minute, what is it about Kenny Miller?
Nah, I don't think so. I think he's got a good reputation in Scottish football. I think most people know what kind of club Livingston are. It's a tough one for him. With Rangers as well, again, difficult situation with the manager and stuff like that. I think they'll look at Kenny Miller and see a guy, as I say, who works his tail off, good professional all his life. Up until the last year, never had any bother. Different circumstances, the last two things that have happened to him. Rangers were in a bit of a mess at the time, Livingston the same. So everyone that you speak to in football about Kenny Miller have all got good things to say about him.
We can't ask you, but we are in the William Hill Open Goal podcast, I believe, but we can ask you, would you put a bet on Kenny Miller to get let's say signs for St Mirren to get double figures goals this season?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, you would.
He's a clever. He's a clever striker. You say he's still fit. He's 38.
He's done you a few times, has he?
Yes. No, let's not talk about that. We can edit that bit. Yeah. Actually, the worst day of my football career.
Was it?
Yeah, the League Cup final. Oh. League Cup final 2010, playing against Rangers, St Mirren Rangers. And we lost 10 men. Kenny scored the goal. Aye.
We're down to 9. Actually.
I'm glad he's got sacked. Actually,
Rangers were down to 9.
Oh, and didn't it? Nine, aye. Just make it worse, aye.
You weren't on the Herbalife then, were you?
No,
you're looking heavy.
No. So, on that, we'll lighten the mood just a wee bit. Shortest managerial spells, and you've been playing, who's come in and poof, out the door quickly.
I had a guy, Paul Hart. Do you remember him? Big
yes,
guy.
Aye.
Is it Nottingham Forest now?
Legend, Nottingham Forest legend.
No legend to me. No legend to me, anyway. Came in, first day, took me in his office, right? He had a list of like 20 tweets that I'd wrote back in the day. I used to write all the shite onto it. And he sat there, and I'm sitting here, he's a big, huge guy, and he started reading these tweets out, and he started pissing himself laughing, I've started pissing myself laughing. We're laughing at my tweets, it was like a load of rubbish.
Give us a flavour, what such as...
I couldn't, mate, it was like, I used to write...
What, about the derogatory things about the club, or
no,
just
it was
life
like,
in general?
Just, life right, in okay, general. Right. So at the end, he was laughing, I thought, this guy loves me, man. He went, that's fucking unacceptable. name or that, you're no play for me if that's the case. Pure bipolar, man. I was like, I thought I was the best guy in the world, then he's cracked it, is right. So after that, me and him just did not get on. Never played, as put us in the stand, only a month in the job, and it finished with us getting relegated at Sheffield Wednesday, and he stood in his pants for an hour telling us how he used to elbow George Best in the back of the head.
Right after
that's a nice fight.
So could not, I was delighted when I seen the back of Paul Hart. Strange.
Off your white pants to people in white coats, didn't
the white pants quickly turned to brown pants.
Did he get the bump right after that?
He got the bump right after it, so I was delighted, a month ahead.
What about you, Lee?
I signed for Dundee United. Ian McCall signed me.
Oh, right.
And I was there for 2.5-3 years. And I think we went through about 4 or 5 managers. McCall, I was 2 weeks in and I'd ruptured my knee, and then McCall got the bullet. And I remember seeing McCall on the night out, and I think he'd had a few drinks. He came up and says, "You're the worst signing I've ever made." And I'd had a few drinks as well, and he says,
That's a recurring theme here.
"You're the worst manager I've ever played under." But after that, there was, in a short spell, there was Gordon Chisholm got the job.
Of course, yeah.
Billy Dodds got the job for one game.
That's right. And they won it.
You won it, yeah, so 100% record, Dan.
Brilliant.
So I don't know anyone can beat that, can they? Billy Dodds, one game.
Yeah.
And then Craig Levein came in. No, sorry, Craig Brewster came in. He wasn't there very long. Oh, I actually felt sorry for Craig Brewster. He came into that dressing room. He'd done well at Inverness, a Dundee United boy, signing for his club that he'd supported all his life, and that came down in the dressing room. The problem was we had people, better coaches than him in the dressing room. We had like Derek McInnes, Paul Ritchie, Jim McIntyre, Grant Brebner, Derek Stilley. A tough dressing room to control, especially if you're roughly the same age as them. So first and foremost, you just try to get rid of them all. And I thought, what you should have done was get these guys on side, ask them for a bit of help, because they were good influence, big influence in the dressing room, these guys. So, and you know yourself, side boys can turn a dressing room. So Craig Brewster got off to the worst start possible, and then he never lasted long. He was away.
He was a fitness fanatic, wasn't he, Craig? He was all about it.
It was incredible. I remember him training the Monday. Time, yeah. I think he was still about 41, and the training the Monday was just running, and he was up the front every single time. And you're like, guy's a freak.
Would the older boys peel him up like?
They were opinionated, let's just say that.
Was that a classic example of players basically saying, "We're not having this guy, we'll see him off the premises"? Sounds that way.
Possibly, aye. It was.
Just shows you players can't be trusted.
They're arseholes, isn't there? Players are arseholes.
He tried to get rid of a lot of them right at the same time, and they thought, well, hang on a minute, we're on long contracts, good contracts. Dundee United were paying good money.
Eddie
at the
Thompson, wasn't it, at the time?
How much were you on a week?
No, enough. That's why I'm still selling Herbalife. So it was a tough dressing, tough for Craig Brewster, and he never dealt with it well. And that's, he wasn't in the job long. He was away, and then Craig Levein came in. So in that spell, my 2.5 years there, I think 4 or 5 managers.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been through a few managers.
Well, quickly, who was your best, most favourite manager?
My best is, this always raises a few eyebrows, is Craig Levein.
Yeah.
Even though he released him at Dundee United, the fact was so organised. He knew every detail about who we were playing. He used to change his team accordingly to their weaknesses and stuff. And at one time we were going to Celtic Park actually, and I remember the shape on a Friday, and he was playing Barry Robson wide right. Barry Robson was the engine arm midfield, and he was playing on wide right. I'm like, what the hell are you doing playing Barry Robson wide right? He was up. He says, because we're going to be under pressure in the game, and what I'm wanting to do is long diagonals up to Barry Robson. He'll beat this. I can't remember who the fullback was. It was a guy they had on loan, big tattoo down his arm.
Oh,
Mo Kamara.
No,
Danny Fox.
Yes,
Fox.
Yes, that was it.
Tony Mowbray's team then.
And then we're going to hit big diags up to Barry Robson. He'll win every single time. And then went Noel Hunt and everyone else picking second balls up in the box. And it worked a treat. I think we only got beat before 4-0. No, but he was, his detail and things was really good. And like I say, I've not got a bad word to say about him, and he released me. Not many people can say that about a manager, just because right from the start, he was honest with me. And that's all you ask for a manager. Be honest, because you get all the bullshit and people, managers lie to your face and stuff like that. He was 100% honest with me, and that's all I could ask for as a player.
We've got a real fair guess.
Brilliant, eh?
Yes. This is definitely a history-making moment here on keeping the ball on the ground. Right, we'll move on. We're 20 minutes in to the programme already. The William Hill podcast with Lee Mayer and our very own Simon Ferry. I'm Mark Guidi, and we'll move on to our next subject, which is going to be plastic pitches, and stay with us because we're going to be talking about the spat between Mourinho and Guardiola that's got everybody talking, and we'll take a wee look back on Lee's career. He's given us a wee flavour and we'll get more of that later on. Okay, plastic pitches. Bad injury for Jamie Murphy at the weekend. Rangers won to get into the quarter final of the League Cup, but soured by the injury to Jamie Murphy. We're still waiting to get the full extent of the injury, but it's not looking good for him, Lee.
No, it's not. I heard Steven Gerrard talking, saying it looks like he'll be out for a while, and he's going to be a big miss for Rangers because he's one of their flair players that actually creates things, so he's going to be a big miss for them. But we don't know if it's down to the plastic pitchers or not, but I don't know anyone.
Plastic pictures?
Yeah.
Picture for on his knee.
Just give him a slap.
I'm away. We don't know if the injury is due to that, the surface or whatever, but I don't know one person in Scottish football likes plastic pitches.
Mm.
And that is truthful. I do not know one person that says, oh yeah, I love playing on a plastic pitch. So I don't know why we've got them.
Well, we've got three in our top flight. As I say, I was at Livy on Saturday, and it's just not conducive to proper football. And I walked, it's funny, I left the media and I walked in the interview areas on the other side of the pitch, so I started walking across the pitch full time, and the guys were shouting, "You're off the pitch, you're walking behind the ball." That's going to make a difference. You take one step on it, and I'm not kidding, 200 or 300 pellets coming up my time.
I've seen it.
Liam Kelly saying, you know, when he's diving about, the pellets are getting in his eyes and his mouth. It's not great. So you've got Kilmarnock, you've got Livingston
and Hamilton.
And look, we know that money's important and it helps financially, etc., etc., but it can't be good for our game. You attract players, and you know, there's a quarter of our top flight with plastic pitches.
The best way to look at it is look at any top league in the world. Do they have plastic pitches?
No.
Not one. It would not happen. So why do we have it? Going back to you say all that financially, is it a financial gain for clubs? Have people actually come out and says, by us having a plastic pitch, we've gained X amount a year? Is that a fact, or is that just people saying, no, it helps financially?
I think, well, certainly if we take, I think Kilmarnock have stopped doing it, but certainly Hamilton, they train on it.
Mm-hmm. They don't need to pay for training.
So right away they're cutting down on training costs of hiring pitches. I suppose the one benefit of it is 99% of the time, you know, you're guaranteed to be able to train at some point during the winter months. So it does have its benefits. But still, when you get back to the bread and butter of a Saturday afternoon, shouldn't
it
be there?
I hate it. See, when you watch games down south, they're no great games, but it looks great. See the pitches in the stadiums, and sometimes you turn over on the next channel and you see an AstroTurf pitch in Scotland, and you just think, didn't help ourselves.
No,
people abroad looking at that game, it just it looks amateurish to me. And like Lee says, no other top league in the world have got it. And I absolutely hate them. I don't play on them, which is probably a good thing.
Do you play?
I don't play on them now.
What, you're my not back, allowed to in terms of like insurance reasons?
No,
or you just know that
I probably could, but it just seems to me every time I play on an AstroTurf pitch I can't move for 2 or 3 weeks. Peter will probably say I can't move at the best of times, but I really don't like them. Honestly, I really do not like playing on them. I feel like I could get in, I actually feel like I could get injured playing on them. I don't go into tackles the way I would on a grass pitch as well, because I think I could hurt. I've got bad ankles. I think I can't go into a tackle.
That said, have either of you two ever been injured, you know, a bad injury on a plastic pitch?
Yep. When I spoke earlier, I said that I ruptured my knee at Dundee United. It was in a training ground at Dundee United, the Gussie, the plastic pitch right across from Tannadice. Blocked a shot. James Grady hit a shot in training. I went to block it, opened up my knee, and I was ruptured my knee. I was out for about a year at Dundee United on a plastic pitch.
See, if you speak to physios and that, they agree. Physios don't think you should play it.
There's not one person.
No,
no one. Going back to the Livingston pitch, it's those black pellets. Those black pellets are like little bits of rubber, and they've got millions of them. It's more like a bouncy castle on a football pitch. Mm-hmm. The bounce of the ball's off, the surface, it doesn't run true. To me, it hinders the game. All right, brilliant, we'll make an extra 10 grand a year, but it's hindering our game.
Mm-hmm.
Fans are then not coming to our game. Kids are not watching football because it's on a stupid plastic pitch. So it's hindering the whole, personally, I think it's hindering the whole of Scottish football, haven't it?
Are there any good plastic? But how does like a brand new pitch at Livy, Hamilton of Ely, how does that compare to some of the AstroTurf in the lower league side?
Montrose is good. I didn't know that because obviously I never played it, but the boys, our boys like playing on Montrose, and I think that's the only one. Airdrie have got a plastic pitch.
I think Falkirk's is meant to be not bad.
Somebody said Falkirk as well, but just in the general thing throughout the whole of it, boys, that they're no good. Even boys that, I think boys that play on them, didn't mind them, obviously you get used to it, but when you're playing on grass and training on grass and then you go to play on an AstroTurf pitch, it's so different. I don't think people understand how different it actually is.
Do you think that the our authorities in our game ought to get together? Because bottom line is, as much as our clubs have got them in the top flight, it's only because a vote has allowed them to have them. Yeah. So, you know, Scottish football has voted and they've allowed the pitch. Is it time to look at that again?
Si's looking at me there, she doesn't want to answer that question.
I think it is, definitely.
I think common sense needs to come into it. Si said to it, you switch on TV, the pitch is not great, it doesn't help, the ball's bobbling all over the place, it then makes a player look rubbish because he needs to take three touches to control it, whereas you could maybe play a pass around the corner first time. It's hindering the game, personally. Like, you even said it there, the goalie's diving and getting black things in his eyes and you can't see the ball.
That's nuts, isn't it?
Something needs to be changed, and I think by getting rid of it, I've heard rumours that Kilmarnock are trying to get rid of theirs at the end of this season.
Yeah, supposedly, yeah, by August next year.
Hopefully more clubs look at that and think, right, it's a way forward.
Just to get back to Jamie Murphy, that's how we kicked off this topic. Even if it's, and I say it only, I don't mean, but let's say it's only 4-5 weeks he's out for, if that includes obviously the UEFA Cup, the Europa League playoff tie, the Old Firm game on September the 2nd, that he's a huge miss for Rangers, isn't he?
I think so. I think he was probably the best signing that they made last year in January. You know what you're getting from him. Even if he's not having a great game, he's one of the attacking players that will work his tail off, you know. Always a threat. Every time he gets the ball, he looks to run at his full back, he looks to set up a goal or score a goal. I think he's been really good for Rangers. Rangers fan, you can tell that the way he plays.
Yeah.
Puts his heart and soul in it. He's a good guy as well, I know Jamie. Good career. I mean, you didn't play with Brighton in the Championship and scored 12 goals if you're not a good player.
Sheffield United
as well. He done really well, so big miss for Rangers. I think he's been really good for Rangers, Jamie Murphy.
I know in terms of they're in for Kyle Lafferty, Lee, and Kyle Lafferty and Jamie Murphy are not like for light, but do you think that makes it even more essential for Rangers to get somebody like Kyle Lafferty in with, you know, with Jamie Murphy potentially going about for a while?
I think so. If you lose one of your starters, you need to go and replace them with someone. Like you say, you can't compare them player-wise, but it's a name and it's a new fresh face into the dressing room, someone that's going to score goals. Lafferty will score goals for Rangers, that's just a fact. But they probably need someone, probably need to go into the transfer window again to get someone that's going to create chances for Lafferty, because that's what Jamie Murphy gets you. I think I seen stats last year that when you come in from January, his stats and goals was very, very high, which just shows you that Rangers are going to miss out over the next few weeks.
I suppose you could say that they've got like Ryan Kent, playing Middleton boys at that. I suppose that'll be up to Stephen Gerrard and his staff to assess, are those guys ready to fill the void that Murphy leaves? As we say, and we're speaking about this without knowing the full diagnosis of the injury, but it may well be that they do have to dip in and go and bring somebody in.
I think Lafferty's first spell at Rangers, I think a couple of times he played off the left though, didn't he? McCoyston, Walter Smith used to play him off the left. Mm-hmm. I think if you come to somewhere like Celtic Park, and I think Lafferty could go and do a shift on the left wing. Mm-hmm. So I think he could go and play there until Jamie Murphy comes back.
I agree with that.
I think even at Tynecastle against Celtic, his goal comes from him running from the left, cut back to the edge of the box, and he puts it in with his left foot. So I think he could go and play there for Rangers until Jamie Murphy's fit.
And also, as well, as you say, like, providing goals, creating goals, they won't have as many guys that can do that on the pitch, because at the moment, Morelos seems to be an absolute fire, isn't he?
That's it. I think there was a lot of question marks over him last year and stuff, and people were questioning it, but Gerrard's backed him. He's come out publicly and backed him, says he wants to give him a new contract, so it's the confidence is shown on the pitch. Great man management from Gerrard, and he's repaying the faith.
He's funny. Did you see him warming up at Kelly? Did you see he had a big gold chain on?
Big belcher.
I was just looking down to see if he had a sovie on. No, but he's done great, and he's a constant pest, isn't he? He works his ball, another one that works his tail off. And he looks like a finisher now, you know. Last season he was snatching at a lot of chances, I thought, but now he looks really composed in front of goal.
I think that's down to confidence. Definitely,
mate.
Gerrard installed that confidence in him, and it's showing every week now.
The one just thing, though, you think, sorry, man,
is that when people say, and you hear a lot of pundits saying it to people in the game, the manager's not overly important with the players, but it just shows you the manager, when you look at what Steven Gerrard's done in a short space of time with players like you're talking about, Brendan Rodgers at Celtic, inherited Ronnie Dyla's team and turned them round overnight.
The biggest example of that, sorry for interrupting, the biggest example of that is Steve Clarke.
Yeah,
where were they sitting bottom of the league? He came in, then not won at home for months and months, won 5 in a draw, I think it was. Totally turned him round. So to me, the manager's the most important person in football club.
Anyone that says a manager's not important, 100%. No. A manager makes you, of course he does.
Manager runs the whole football club.
Uh-huh. At least he should.
Yes. Well, aye. Well,
unless you're Kenny Miller.
Right, we better move on before the lawyers get involved. Mourinho v Guardiola, kicking off again.
Yes.
Brilliant. I don't know about you, but I love it. The new documentary out on Amazon, All or Nothing.
It?
I've not watched it yet, but I will. 8 45-minute episodes.
Oh, it's
is
amazing.
That right? I've seen wee snippets of it, and I've read the reviews, and it gets great reviews. But also, Mourinho was asked about it at his Sunday press conference last week with the newspapers, and it sparked his reaction about City. They lack class, and he wants royalties for being involved. Just sum up Mourinho's chat. I mean, he's
bonkers, isn't he?
But there's always a wee message in everything that he says, isn't there?
Yeah, Mourinho's very, very clever. What you'll find with Mourinho is you'll throw a bomb out there when his team's not doing well, and it's to distract away from his team. Mm-hmm. And for instance, we're now talking about the Man U spat with Man City rather than the fact that they got beat for Brighton.
Yeah.
So he's very, very clever with what he does. But it's a genius to watch the two of them at it. Two top, very intelligent guys. They know what they're doing. Yeah. Try to wind each other up. It's a bit like the Kevin Keegan Alex Ferguson thing a few years ago, but I can't see any of these two biting as much as Keegan did.
But it's been going on for years between the two, right back to Barca, Real Madrid. It's just been content, and it must be absolutely eating Mourinho up. Yeah. The Guardiola's get the upper hand just now.
I think that's why he doesn't. I think he realises that he can't get to Guardiola football wise. And he thinks that the only way he can get to him is by getting in his head. But the documentary does lack a bit of class when it comes to them talking about Mourinho if you actually watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, they slaughter him for selling De Bruyne, make a big thing about Mourinho knocked his player back, and then they also make a big thing about him parking the bus, saying Guardiola style of play, everyone loves it.
So sorry, just because I've not seen it, for people who have not seen it, you're talking about the slaughter him for selling De Bruyne when he had him at Chelsea.
Uh-huh.
In terms of, is this...
It's not Guardiola saying it's Guardiola. The narrator. No, so it's that, they've been quite clever about it. Right, okay. It's the narrator saying it. Ben Kingsley is.
Right, okay.
And basically saying that Mourinho's tactic is to park the bus, so it's beautiful football, but it does kind of slaughter him. But it doesn't come directly at him. So you could just imagine him sitting watching it. I'd love to have seen his face in that Lowry Hotel when he was sitting watching it with his big dressing gown on. But for me, Guardiola's streets ahead of him now. Miles ahead of him. When you watch something with Guardiola, it'll blow your mind.
When you see the pictures from Sundays, you say that the Brighton defeat, and then you see the body language and the face on the chief exec, Ed Woodward, and obviously they're going at it, Woodward and Mourinho hammering tongs. You know, Mourinho's briefing his pals in the media, Woodward's holding private briefings, you know, giving his side of the story against why players haven't been signed that Mourinho wanted. You can see there absolutely that all's not well.
Well, as soon as you see that, you see there's a slight divide. And rather than the two of them going together and pulling the club in the one direction, if there's a slight divide there, then it doesn't... I can't see that lasting well long term, especially the start that Mourinho's got off to.
And you've been a central defender in your career, Lee. He's been looking for central defenders. He's made it clear, whether it have been Harry Maguire or Alderweireld at Spurs, that when you watch them and you see like Baye performing there on Sunday, it's clear they do need central defenders.
They do. If you look back at the Man U teams through the years, Steve Bruce, Gary Pallister, that too was like a base for the rest of them to go and build on. Mm-hmm. Nowadays they've got too many, oh he's brilliant with the ball and stuff. Yeah. You're a defender. Yep, you need, nowadays I'm all for playing, you need to play from the back, but first and foremost, you can't defend, you're going to be leaking goals.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, get yourself two defenders that can defend, and then you've got the flair players. Well, he's turning these flair players into fullbacks and stuff now, isn't he?
Yeah.
And sitting midfielders and stuff. So, but to me, it takes the joy off away from watching Man U, because I was brought up watching the Man U attacked at pace. You've got Giggs, you've got Beckham, you've got Keane, you've got York, you've got all these guys up front that are just attacking football. And it's now you don't even switch a TV on to watch Man U now.
Yeah.
That's the case it's got, and it's quite sad actually.
But see, if you're the board, I agree 100% with him. You look at him, he signed Lindelof and Bailey last year for £80 million.
Yeah.
So why would you give him another £80 million to go and buy two duds?
Yeah.
Who's to say he's going to go and get two that'll come in and do well? So I can see exactly where the board are coming from, and if it's me, I would get rid of him.
And you look at, I think we're spoken about it in the show before, Simon, but you look at Mourinho's CV, and you see a pattern develop, don't you? Every couple of years, he starts working the exit plan, and you know, before you know it, you know, he's, and good luck to him, whatever he's on, 8, 10, 12 million quid to shake hands and call it a day.
Zidane's sitting there without a job, go and get Zidane in. Get some real football.
It'd be interesting to see, because you wonder if Zidane, you always remember the old Real Madrid coach who became the Spanish national coach, Del Bosque. But he never really got the credit he deserved with all the trophies that he won in with Spain as well, because he said, ah, well, you know, you've got all the superstars, the Galacticos. But so it'd be interesting to see Zidane, having had Ronaldo at his peak and Gareth Bale and Ramos and all those guys, if he goes to a Man United, Zidane, and you actually see, right, wait a minute, you've got a challenge here, because you are number two or number three or number four or number five in the country. Go and see if you can go and catch Man City. So it'll be a real test to see what Zidane's actually all about, if it comes to it.
Then comes down to his man management skills and his coaching ability, how to develop and get the best. Don't get me wrong, there's a talented squad there. It's about getting them playing exciting football again, which will make everyone want to watch Man U again. But it's gone stale. At Man U, it's gone a bit stale. And like you say, there's nothing worse than watching a Man U team sitting looking for to go and score on a break and win 1-0. That's just not what we're used to.
So
there's only, what's kind of say, there's only one man that I'd put with Zidane to take that job, Venables.
You must have got a deal at this hotel in Spain or something. You're going to
I'm desperate for Venables to get some sort of job.
You're going to want to do a review.
I've missed someone here. What's his name?
Yeah, right. What was the job you threw him in for recently?
Scotland job.
Is it Scotland? Scotland. I thought it was a Peterhead job to replace Jimmy Mack. Right, okay. On the documentary, so we're getting an insight into what's going on, and you know, proper flying the ball, access all areas kind of stuff. So if you, any of the clubs you've been at, any of the dressing rooms you've been in your career, if you to choose one that would say that would have been gold, that one season would have been gold for whatever reasons, tell us what you would go for.
You want to go first?
No, you can't. Right. Give me 10.
You don't mind the cameo, mate. He's 18 months in charge. See, when I watched Guardiola, that is what he was like.
Yeah.
But with the fact that you could think he could probably punch Mark in the... See, with Guardiola, he goes mad. He goes mental at them. See, like top players, he goes absolutely mental at them. You wouldn't believe it, eh? Like, gives him the finger and that. I'm saying it, eh? He gives him the finger and stuff. Like, that's what he would do. Oh, if you had 18 months with him, it would be a bestseller, bam, honestly, with the cameo.
Aye.
Boys were getting pinned up against the wall, and it's a great time.
Lee?
Mine's would probably be back to the Dundee days with the Italian brothers, the Benetti brothers.
You were there,
eh? Oh, that was...
De Stefano in charge of the club.
That was comedy. That was... It was just different superstar coming every day. One day Ravanelli came in, you're like, hang on, what's going on? next day Claudio Caniggia, and you're like, right, you're waiting for Jeremy Beadle coming in next.
They tapped you as well, didn't they? Still owe you a fiver, don't they?
Aye, they do, aye. I don't think I'll be getting that. I'm chasing them up for the Facebook. But
did they do anything mad, the Italians?
It was just total different. They came in and straight away they started training at 3 o'clock every day, because it says, right,
they loved a long line, didn't they?
You play it, it's because they were in the Mardi Gras and Dundee till 3 o'clock every night. But the brother Dario done the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life, because obviously Scottish weather, it's soaking all the time. He used to put his feet in carrier bags. You're laughing, this is true. He used to put his feet in carrier bags, tie them in a knot, and then put his socks and his boots on. He's running about with carrier bags on his feet. This guy's played for Italy, and he's training. He's teaching us with carrier bags in his feet, and I was like, "Wow, this is surreal."
Brilliant, eh? What was Ravanelli? Can you do it?
I've never seen much of Caniggia because I was on loan at the time, but I got told, great guy. But Ravanelli, you could not meet a nicer guy.
Yeah.
Oh, absolute legend for what he's done in the game, and for just so down to earth, would have done anything for anyone. Mm-hmm. Just
and
a top
Burley
top guy.
Popped up there, didn't he?
Well, it was Craig Burley and Ravanelli coming at the same time. Yeah. They were staying in the hotel together. But
Duff was the manager. Duff signed them, didn't he? And then the Benettis came in, is that right?
No, the other way about.
The other way about.
The Benettis came in. And then they got the bullet, and then Duff came in and had to deal with all of them.
And then it was Ravanelli and Burley.
Aye, they came in because that was when De Stefano was there.
Yeah.
And then he was like, right, we've got all this money. And Duff says, right, okay, I'll test this. Go and buy James McFadden for £1 million for Motherwell. Mm. And then nothing came of it. So he was like, right, this guy's full of shite. And then we then got Ravanelli in, Craig Burley. But they never got paid. The 2-3 months they were there, they never got paid. So then the club went into administration.
Did you get paid?
I got paid.
Is that true about Craig Burley?
As long as you get paid.
What, he never got paid?
No, he lost his teeth chasing your touch.
Brilliant. Oh, class. I've no now we've got a comeback for that.
You were talking about Di Stefano. They were linked with somebody. It was like a World Cup winner. I remember. But I think it was was it Edgar Davids?
Davids was linked,
right? There
was a different story coming out every day. There was one thing linked with Madonna coming and doing a song. Honest to God, we were in training just thinking.
The Dundee Courier, alright. Oh. Front page, that is the Dundee Courier.
That was brilliant, man.
Even in Tilly had a new
Madonna
story.
Madonna, Deja Vu.
I've got a story for Edgar Davids about you. You remember he was the Barnet manager?
Yes,
aye. My mate played for Barnet, Ricky Holmes. He came to Portsmouth after Barnet, and we were obviously talking about the car. He's like, mate, Davids was a screwball. He gave himself the number one shirt. So Davids won, captain, centre midfielder.
Taking every corner, free kick, penalty.
He says his first game had done shape on a Friday. The fullback gets the ball, right back, and David shows, and the fullback opens up and puts a great ball down the channel. Yes. The striker runs on it, across it, scores. No, stop. What are you doing? To the fullback, and the fullback's like, well, I've just put it in the channel and we've scored things. He's like, yes, but I'm Edgar Davids.
Did you know Edgar Davids was Canadian?
I was thinking that. He's Dutch.
Pass the ball to Edgar Davids. What is this, kindergarten? That's what he said. Amazing, huh?
Oh, it's class.
There you go.
We'll finish this segment off. Just go back to Guardiola. If you're seeing him, you see how intense he is telling his players, hate me if you want, hate me if it makes you play better and gets us to win the game. I mean, he's obviously, and yet when you see him in the pressers, he can be, most of the time he's calm, he's very handsome, he's all that, he's got the look, he's got the think, but he's obviously, he can be wired, eh?
Oh, he's a mad genius. That's what I think his mind never stops. It's even a documentary after away games. Shows you that them flying home and they're all sleeping and he's sitting up on his laptop, fucking obviously watching the game and writing stuff down.
Following Derek Ferguson's coupon.
Watching the Chick Chandler.
But just to finish off, Guardiola, do you think it was the kind of guy that you'd love to have played for? Because there's no doubt he's a genius, isn't he?
I would have loved to. You see his passion and that just rubs off in the dressing room. The biggest thing I saw, I've only seen a little bit of the documentary as well, but when he's talking, every single person's listening to every word he's saying. Mm-hmm. That tells you the respect he's got, and the, like I say, just you described him perfectly. A mad genius.
Yeah. He's great. But I think it'd be hard to play for him because I think it's grueling. I mean, the training that you see, quite a lot of times it's night time that they're training, so they must be doing double sessions all the time. Yeah. Which you know yourself, players don't enjoy doing it.
No.
But he's obviously got these top players to follow him, and that just tells you everything about him, really.
Yeah, and if ever we're down in he's got his nice restaurant, tapas restaurant in Manchester as well, but I've heard it's not as good as Terry Venables' one in Spain. Right, Lee, we're going to finish off on the last 3 or 4 minutes of the programme, so that means if we dedicate a segment to each of your clubs, that'll be about 10 seconds per club. Tell us about life after football then. You've obviously retired, you had a good career, as you've said, but you're trying one or two things in business. So what made you go down that road rather than staying in the game in some capacity?
Well, once I retired, I went part-time for two years. I never really enjoyed that. I was assistant manager at Stranraer. I loved the coaching side. I've got all my coaching badges.
Who was the manager there too? Were you?
Brian Reid,
right.
Yeah, so I now understand why managers take in their good mates as assistants. I never knew Brian Reid at all. Right. I just took it because I jumped at a chance of being an assistant manager. But let's just say it didn't work out. We were totally different. He was more an old-school shouter, saying F every second word, and it was just totally different to the way I would go about it and coach and develop. These guys at part-time needed coached and developed, where so it didn't really work between me and him. We've not spoke actually since. But so after that I got a bit sickened of it. I then decided to join the real world and got a real job. So because, like you say, the reason that I went into this was because I had to. Si will back me up here that footballers in Scotland, you can't retire at 35 with your feet up. Mm-hmm. The income's not as great as what people think. Mm-hmm. So I started working for an IT company. It was okay for 2 years. I then lost the job because the club went into administration. To say the club, I'm used to talking about Dundee.
the business
got went into administration, so I decided to set up on my own. So I'm currently now running two businesses. I've got a utilities business called Mare Savings, and I've got a herbalife business on the side, helping people get fit and healthy. So it's keeping me busy.
Enjoying it?
Loving it. I'm loving working for myself. The fact that I can come in here and meet you guys on a Tuesday morning, whereas if I'm working for somebody else 9 to 5, I couldn't do things like this. But it's tough because the pressure's on yourself, but you make it work. So it's I'm really enjoying it.
And do you consider yourself fortunate for the life that football gave you as well? You say, you know, Aberdeen in Europe, playing against Bayern Munich at the Allianz Arena, playing in cup finals with St Mirren, playing with guys like Ravanelli and guys like that. You must feel very privileged as well.
Yeah, definitely. You look back on it now and it's one of those, Si, you're maybe the same, you think, you wish you gave it a bit more.
More, definitely, mate.
You're sitting kicking your heels and you're thinking, I had an okay career, but if I gave it absolute everything I got, it's the one advice I give to any kid out there. If you've got a chance, give it everything you've got. If you fail, so what? If not, if it works off, you don't know where it can take you. But looking back over the career, very happy with it. Could have been better, but yeah, great. Like you say, playing for Aberdeen, I'm from Aberdeen, so to sign for them again, to play for them in the last 32 of the European Cup against Bayern Munich at a full house at Pittodrie was just incredible. Getting goosebumps thinking about it, because I used to go to Pittodrie as a kid, watch all the games, Willie Miller, Brian Irvine, etc., and then to play for them in a game like that was just incredible. Playing in cup finals, the one thing that I never got was a Scotland cap, which is disappointing, but I just
Bertie Vokes never capped you.
Oh, Bertie, that's what I was just about to say.
That's been the only
you
one.
You love Terry Venables, I love Bertie Vokes. Bertie Vokes have been in the B squad, so I'm just gutted he got the sack. I would have had about 50 caps for Scotland.
And do you think, although you're in business and you're doing well, you're enjoying it, well, do you think a temptation will come to try and get back into the game at some level?
I got asked last year by two clubs to go and help them out, but it wasn't right for me at the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realise with football as well is you're all over the place. I've lived in Aberdeen, Dundee, Manchester, Dundee, back to Aberdeen, now settled in Glasgow. So if you've got a family life as well, that's taking kids out of school, the wife and things like that. So I'm now settled in South Glasgow. But it's all I know. I left school at 16 straight into football, so there's always going to be someone that entices you back in, but it needs to be the right thing for me and my family. But
fancy a lovely job?
No.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure having you on the show, Lee. Thanks for joining us on the Open Goal podcast, Keeping the Ball on the Ground, in association with our friends at William Hill. Si, it's been a pleasure.
That was great. I loved
that
it.
Was it. Yeah, 47, good 40 laugh. Minutes. Did you enjoy that?
I did, mate. I loved it.
Well, last week we left and we went and gave Simon a big kiss and a cuddle because he was feeling unloved. We're now going to change it up this week, Si. We're going to head to the pub. We're going to go and get a bevy with Brian Reid and he's going to tell us exactly what he thinks of Lee Mare. We'll join you next week. Thanks
That'll
for listening.